It is time for the food maven, Arthur Schwartz, and a little birdie in my ear told me that Arthur would be reminiscing, so I thought I'd play a little bit of the Little River Band. Good morning, Arthur.
Oh, good morning. It feels like I'm always reminiscing these days.
That's part of life.
Well, it's part of older life,
I do think.
But also, all my nostalgia stuff is being prompted by I'm cleaning my office.
Yeah,
boxes full of stuff that needed to be sorted out. And actually, I have enough file space because I threw out so much stuff. Anyway, one of the things I found that gave me very high nostalgia is a cookbook of, quote, treasured recipes by the Sisterhood of Marine Park Jewish Center. That is the Jewish center that I grew up in, from early age of Sunday school through Bar Mitzvah 13. I think I did. I finished the year after my Bar Mitzvah, which was in March. I actually stayed until June. Not many boys did. Anyway, this book was edited and compiled by a woman named, and this is the way women went by these days, those days, Mrs. Say Preston. Sometimes it was Mrs. the husband's name, and you never even knew who the woman was. But in this case, it's this, a sisterhood, by the way, is the woman's auxiliary, so to speak, of a conservative synagogue. Every conservative synagogue has a sisterhood. Anyway, the names in this are only vaguely, in all the recipes are labeled. They're only vaguely familiar, and the most familiar is Isabel Josephsberg, who was in fact a friend of my mother's, but an older friend of my mother's. There's somehow no date anywhere in this book, but I'm now examining it more and more, feeling it was before my time. I got Bar Mitzvah in 1960. This could be the generation prior to mine. Isabel Josephsberg had grown children when I was a teenager, so there you are. And there were a few other, she was, by the way, Marine Park Jewish Center royalty, and had a business. Not many women in those days, as they said, went to business. Do you remember that expression?
I do.
But Isabel and her husband had a cutlery company called Supreme Cutlery, and it was all this mid-century modern stuff from Japan. And I actually have a service of the that my mother bought, and that I now see in flea markets as being rather collectible. They have these black sleek handles, and I don't know. I guess the top is made from, could be. They're not stainless steel. If it is, it's a brushed kind of stainless. I have to find out. It looks like aluminum, but they're very light. So I'm looking. I just opened the book randomly, and I find Isabel Josephsberg's applesauce Jell-O dessert.
That's a little. I just so you know, I still have measure for pleasure from I guess it was Temple Emmanuel
in Buffalo,
and the recipes. You know, some of them, Imperial Stew, which is it's imperial because it's got sour cream in it. You know, some of them are really good.
Yeah, no. And, in this book, I can tell you that a lot of them are really good. In fact, I baked one this morning, which I'll get to in a second. But here is a treasure in this book. Now, this is a recipe I wish I had 20 years ago when I was looking for recipes for biscuit tortoni. Remember tortoni? It was served in Italian-American restaurants. I did discover that tortoni was probably, most likely, created by a Neapolitan who opened the first we'll have to say gelateria in Paris, and his name was Tortoni. So we're assuming that he invented this. It's really a semifreddo, and I do believe I have a Tortoni, a good one, good enough one, in New York City food, because it was a real New York City Italian-American item. I don't know people. Do you have them in Buffalo?
Of course.
Yeah, you did. Okay.
Of course. Just so you know, Italians and Poles.
Italians what?
We had Italian-Americans and we had Polish-Americans.
No, I know you had a lot of big Italian-American community. Also, Utica has a big Italian-American community from the South also. In any case, this recipe looks really good because the macaroon flavor comes from, I'm assuming, the Italian amaretti, because it calls for dry macaroon crumbs. I'm going to make it before I give you the recipe. But by the way, so I did make pineapple coffee cake from Edda Landberg.
Was
Edda
it upside
Landberg,
down?
Pardon me?
Did it have pineapple on the bottom?
No, it's not pineapple upside down cake at all.
Fooey.
And I woke up this morning and saying, I'm going to do this before I even get on the radio. And it reminded me of a woman I knew late in her life. Early in her life, she was one of the real buddies of James Beard. I think at one point, early, she worked for him when he was when he had this hors d'oeuvre company before he became famous. Anyway, she died in her mid-90s, could be 10 years ago already. And I remember, her name is Alice, I cannot remember her last name. I remember where she lived, I remember everything but her last name. In any case, Al, you know, one day, like when she was 90 or something, everybody at the table said, well, so what's the secret that you're so spry and youthful at 90? And she said, I wake up every morning and think, what will I bake today? So she had something to live for every day until the last year of her life when it was totally tragic, and I'm not going to get into that. But as I said, she died baking in her 90s. And so this book brought back, you know, a lot of memories of my old neighborhood, and I am still in touch I was until yesterday, one of my mother's closest friends, Shirley Block. I've seen Shirley a number of times over these recent years, and talked to her on the phone. Shirley, again, one of these women who was spry and fabulous until she into her 90s, and I do believe she would have been 94 this month. And just as I was going to call her to ask her about some of the names in this cookbook and see if she could figure out when it was published, and also maybe she knew some of these women and could tell me which were the good cooks and which weren't. And Shirley, I would trust Shirley on this. Anyway, I just as I was going to call her yesterday morning, my sister called me to tell me that Shirley passed away in her sleep. And the funeral is tomorrow, and I think she's the last possible person I could ask about this book, but, you know, the loss of Shirley is a big loss for us. And Shirley was a wonderful cook. I didn't eat at her house that often because, you know, I ate at my house. But I do remember her, everybody saying, including my grandmother, who was like the most judgmental person on earth, saying Shirley was a really good cook. So, my mother was dying. She was home from the hospital. She had the same brain cancer that John McCain has. And hers was inoperable. So she was at home, failing. And she had an attendant, a woman she was very fond of, a Haitian woman who was very into makeup and hair. So, you know, it was like a beauty parlor in my mother's room every morning. But who wasn't the greatest housekeeper. And one of my mother's close friends, Roberta, really didn't like this woman and also didn't like her bad housekeeping. And one day Roberta came before I got there, I was there every day, but I used to go home to sleep, and I probably didn't get there until, I don't know, mid-morning or so. And I get there, and I discovered that Roberta had cleaned out the refrigerator, including my very treasured bowl of chicken fat.
Oh, no.
Which I had, yes, So I had rendered, you know, I don't use chicken fat all the time, but it was Passover, I guess. My mother passed away in May, and so this was probably in March. Anyway, she threw away my chicken fat, schmaltz. I was fit to be tied, as you can imagine. But I needed fat. So I called Shirley. And sure enough, Shirley said, well, I just bought a case of chickens that I'm dressing for my daughter, Carol. She didn't have to say my daughter, I know, for Carol. And I have a lot of chicken fat here. So you want me to render it, or do you want to render it?
Oh, that's great. You know, that having someone like that on the planet is really helpful.
Around the corner.
Yeah. Even better.
I didn't even have to get in the car. We lived on 34th Street. Shirley lived on 38th Street, four blocks away. Anyway, Shirley will be missed. She was a smart and delightful person. My grandfather, my mother's father, thought she was the best of my mother's friends, and I would have to second that. There was a couple of others that I was extremely fond of, but I think Shirley is it. If there's anybody left, they may be at the funeral tomorrow, and I'll find out. We did have a lunch plan some months ago, and that got canceled because Shirley's grandson came in to visit from Las Vegas, adult grandson. And he rang the bell. She knew it was him. She was so excited that he was, you know, there visiting her and blah, blah. And I'm sure Shirley was totally coiffed and dressed and looked fabulous and beautiful. And instead of taking her walker to get to the door, she rushed to the door and fell. And thank God her grandson was there. He took care of her and everything, but that was sort of the beginning of the end. But that was only maybe 2 months ago. No, maybe 4 months ago. Anyway, so I made this pineapple coffee cake, it's called, by Hedda Landberg, when I woke up this morning. It is super easy, but it's not really, I would call it closer to a biscuit or maybe muffin than a coffee cake. And the giveaway is the way it's mixed. You mix flour and sugar and baking powder together, the dry ingredients, a pinch of salt as well. And then you cut in a stick of butter until you get fairly fine pieces. You know, you don't want any lumps of butter. I use my handheld, I don't know what you call it, pastry blender. Is that what you could do this in a food processor, pulsing on and off, even a small food processor. I think it'll fit, but a big one for sure. 2 cups of flour. I spooned and leveled it. You know, spooned it into the measuring cup and then leveled it. 1 cup of granulated sugar. 2 teaspoons of baking powder. A big pinch of salt. And then cut in, or pulse in the food processor, 1 stick of butter that you've cut up into pieces until you get, well, what Hedda Landberg says is fine crumbs. Now, set aside, measure out 1/4 cup of the crumbs and just set them aside for now. So to this dry ingredient, you're going to add the following liquids, 2 egg yolks, and 1 9-ounce can of crushed pineapple. I figured when I read this that by now this has got to be not 9 ounces anymore. And sure enough, I go to the supermarket to buy my can of crushed pineapple, and they're now 8 ounces. So an ounce in a recipe like this, an ounce could make a difference. So I decided to add 2 tablespoons of milk as an additional liquid. But I think that if you, now that I've made it and it's cooled and I see the texture, I think the 8-ounce can without the additional milk would be just fine. So to those ingredients that you've, the dry ingredients, the flour, sugar, baking powder, pinch of salt, And now it's cut in all this butter to fine crumbs. You add 2 egg yolks and the 1 8-ounce can of crushed pineapple. Stir it all together. You'll get a nice, rather dense dough. And with the 2 egg whites, beat them until they're stiff, and then fold them in. Put that in a 9-inch cake pan. Now, Etta said greased 9-inch cake pan, but I think better buttered and floured. It'll get come out of the pan easier. And then unlevel it off with a spatula and cover the top as best you can with the 1/4 cup of reserved crumbs. And then bake it, she says, in a moderate oven until brown. So I baked it at 350, and mine took 35 minutes. It could be a half an hour if you took out those 2 tablespoons of milk. I'm going to play with this again because it is very delicious. It's a very light cake. As I said, more like a biscuit or muffin, a light muffin consistency. I haven't attempted to take it out of the pan yet, but I think you might just want to cut it into portions and take it out of the pan that way. Maybe when I get off the air, I'll attempt turning it upside down and getting it out of the pan. But, I mean, it did brown around the edges. It did come away from the pan a little bit. But I'm concerned about the center of the cake sticking because it's quite moist. I left mine in an extra 5 minutes only because I didn't think it was quite brown, too brown yet. And I didn't test clean. In fact, what you want to do with this cake is you want to touch the surface and make sure that it's firm.
Yeah, and talk about testing for a sec. Just these little things that you are...
test.
Huh?
Yes. Well, testing means you take a toothpick...
And you stick it
in. And you stick it in, usually in the middle, because the sides always cook faster than the middle. And if it comes out clean, it's done. However, I noticed with this cake that even though it came out clean, it felt too soft on the top, so I put it back in for another 5 minutes, and it seems to be fine. I mean, I took one piece out already, and I'm trying to hide it from myself because
it's good.
It's very good. It only has it's not overwhelmingly sweet, and it's not like punch you in the base pineapple flavor either. It's very good pineapple flavor. I think it's a good breakfast cake. I'm rationalizing eating it this morning.
But the other thing, it just, and you reminded me, because coffee cake used to means, you're reminding me of my grandma. So I'm reminiscing too, but, you know, if someone made coffee cake, that was really literally not necessarily always terribly sweet.
No, you know, I don't know. I prefer what we call coffee cake to layer cake, although I can't, no, I shouldn't.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. What was I thinking?
no, because I remember
and by the way, don't expect a lot of great crumbs on this cake. You could put great crumbs on, but the 1/4 cup of crumbs adds a tiny bit of crunch to the top, but it's not like it's not a crumb cake. Just to say.
Okay.
You could make, as I said, you could make your own crumbs and put them in there and it would be good. But no, I don't know. There are other cakes in this book that I think baking, in fact, was considered more like, I guess it still is, more...
exact?
I don't know. Homey or something. You know, like you could, whatever. But there's a lot of cake in here. And a lot of cake I want to make. Unfortunately, this is in the days of Crisco. Now, I say unfortunately only because Crisco is not Crisco anymore. Crisco, once they took the trans fats out of Crisco, they changed its cooking abilities. And to give you an example, I have a recipe for Schraft. Are they ginger cookies? And they were sensationally crisp when you had them at Schraps, which, by the way, crisp cookies are a thing of the past, it seems. But in those days, we admired crisp cookies. So the original recipe is in my book, New York City Food. But if you make it today, the Crisco product is different, and they won't be as crisp. And in fact, what I always keep thinking I should do is try to make some of these Crisco products with palm oil, because palm oil makes things crisp.
Why aren't we allowed to have crisp cookies anymore?
Because it's a generational thing, Jill.
Sorry.
Young people want, or should say younger people, they know, even some of them are not so young anymore, want a soft cookie.
Huh.
I think it was, wasn't Mrs. Field cookie soft?
Softer, probably.
Yeah,
I just remember in the 1970s, 80s,
we started getting these soft cookies, and they have since taken over. It's like to say, it's exactly like sweet gefilte fish. You know, you can't find a non-sweet gefilte fish anymore. If you want to buy it from some place, even a good place, they always have sugar added. And there is a gefilte fish recipe in this Marine Park Jewish Center Sisterhood book, and it is identical to my grandmother's gefilte fish recipe, with one exception, is that my grandmother taught me that you have to keep chopping the fish, after you grind it in the meat grinder, you still have to chop it for a very long time, because the chopping develops the protein. So that you don't have to add as much starch to the fish to get it into nice, shapely, pats. I don't know what you call them, gefilte fish patties.
That's what you call them. You call them the gefilte fish. They look like little fish.
Yeah, gefilte means stuffed.
So I understand.
Originally, it was river carp. We're talking about in Lithuania. and Eastern Europe, it was river carp that was boned out, and the carp has a zillion million little bones, so that was another reason to make it into a force meat, to make it into a patty like that, was that you could at least get the bones out, and then you season the fish and you put it back into the skin of the fish, and that was the gefilte fish.
Yeah.
Do I have time to talk about meatloaf?
You've got 4 minutes. I mean, Marshall has just informed me with a sort of look on his face. So.
Well, it's one of everybody's favorite things, I think. So yesterday morning, not knowing, every day I'm responsible for meals, what to make.
I know the feeling. It's like, okay, what's it going to be later?
So I said, all right, Bob, if you could eat anything at all, what would you want to eat today? And he said, meatloaf and potatoes. So that was an easy accommodation, but boring. So I had to come up with something that was a tiny bit creative to keep my interest. And in fact, I didn't do anything terribly creative, except that the last time I made meatloaf, and I served it to my friend Roseanne, and I made it with grated raw onion, when she said, oh, this is an interesting onion flavor I've never had, I knew that that was not a pleasing flavor to her, although a flavor I grew up with. A grated onion were in a lot of ground meat recipes. But anyway, I decided, yes, I'll cook the onion. So I sauteed a medium onion along with a big rib of celery minced in some olive oil until quite tender. About halfway through, I added at least a teaspoon of dried thyme, which I rubbed between my palms to make it powdery. And I cooked that along with the onions and celery. Why? Because the thyme is dry, and it will give its flavor to the fat in the pan and also the onions and celery. And then when you mix it into the meat, you're going to get a nice background thyme flavor. Thyme, to me, brings out the flavor of beef. So that was it. I added that to my 2 pounds of meat, 2 eggs, 3/4 cup of dry breadcrumbs with no sugar in them. You have to look on labels these days. Your breadcrumbs may be hiding some sugar, but you can buy without. And what else? 2 eggs. And my secret ingredient, learned from my mother, I put in a half cup, could have been two-thirds of a cup, of tomato puree. And a little extra salt and quite a bit extra pepper. And I baked it at 350 degrees for an hour and 10 minutes. I roasted the potatoes around the meatloaf.
Yeah, this is what my mom used to do. Well, one day I'll give you my mom's, but not today.
Well, my mother used to use canned potatoes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, that is a specific
taste. They were called Irish potatoes.
Yes, I remember being so hungry once I ate it raw. But yeah.
No, but you drain a can of those and throw it around the... But I cut my potatoes into big chunks, and I parboiled them for 5 minutes after they came to the boil. And cold water, bring to the boil, 5 minutes in the water, take them out, salt them, and put them around the meatloaf.
Yeah. My grandmother could cook. My mother was like, I don't know what she was doing.
My mother was a reluctant cook. She did it well when she did it, but she didn't love to do it. She went through jags where she did, because I do remember periods where we ate, you know, more elaborate things and then not.
My mom
I always think just broiling a piece of meat and giving you a fresh vegetable, and that's cooking.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, Marshall's making a face.
Yeah, now we're late.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to finish. I'm not going to finish the cake. I'm going to put it away.
All right.
No, you're not. You're going
to
eat it.
I wish you were here to share it with me. It's really good.
You're going to eat it. It's going to be eaten.
Well, not it shouldn't be now.
Okay. Love to, Bob. Have a good week.
Take care. Have a great week.
All right, bye-bye. Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. You can also find him on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand, click on Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. It's just that simple. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton, Flawless Catering and Event Planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, JARestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.